I'll ask with a word of prayer. Well, it's good to see everyone here, especially those who've been absent from our midst for a while, and it gives an indication that we're all getting healthier. It's springtime, everybody's feeling better, so it's good to see everyone. This morning's lesson carries us from the appearances of Jesus just after he had appeared to the women, after his resurrection, down to basically the ascension, and it is focused on relating information to us associated with the appearances and what their purposes would be. Now, first off, what would that purpose have served for you if you had been in the position of the apostles at that time? It would have confirmed what? It would have confirmed the resurrection. It would have been a what? A faith builder. It would have encouraged them, no doubt. When they came away from the crucifixion, how were they? They were doubting. They were in shambles. They didn't know what to believe. Here they had been expecting Jesus to be raised and to be a king, and he was killed. So, what are they to do? Well, we see some of them, they gather in rooms for fear of the Jews. And they depart and they go to Galilee and separate themselves from everyone else. They still don't really understand what's going on. And they won't understand it all the way up until the day of Pentecost, really, when they receive the full measure of the Holy Spirit. But these occurrences now that are going to occur basically in the last 40 days leading up to the Pentecost, we're going to have occurrences of his appearance to different ones as faith builders. To keep them moving in the right direction, giving an opportunity to teach them further, as we'll see with the discussion with those two men on the road to Emmaus and how he instructed them. So, and even with the women, he instructed them, this is the Christ, he's risen, it's fulfillment of prophecy. So, as we begin our study today, we open with the two disciples on the way to Emmaus. And the more lengthy discussion of that occurs in Luke 24, 13 through 32. If you would, open to there. I wanted to go ahead and list the different appearances. You know, there are a significant number of appearances on the first day. We pick up and carry that further. But all the way down to end of the first day, he's appeared to a significant number of people. You consider the key people associated with his followers and his disciples. But on the road to Emmaus, there were two individuals. And we only have record of one individual's name, named Cleopas. And as they're walking on the road to Emmaus, leaving Jerusalem, they're discussing amongst themselves the events of the day. Now, no doubt they would have been discussing the events of what had happened to Jesus. And it's interesting to look at the recorded account here because they are aware of all of the things that have transpired. They're aware of the priests and others taking Jesus and delivering him up and having him crucified and how unjust that was. They're indignant about that, but they also relate, well, we were expecting Jesus to be our king and now our to set up a kingdom, and now we don't really know what to do. Well, as they're walking along and discussing this, someone comes up and joins himself to them and asks, can he follow along with them? So as he's walking along and listening to the discussion, the question is posed, what are these things you're talking about as you walk along, and why are you so sad? Now, why would Jesus need to ask that question? He knows their thoughts and intents of their hearts, but he's getting them to think so that he can carry on a conversation. He is still in human form now in his appearance to them, and he's got to interact with them in that way. And at this point, he does not want to reveal himself to them. He's using this as a teaching opportunity. We can use it as a teaching opportunity as well, because the storyline here as it relates this, it's very important what he tries to convey to them. Okay. He listens to their discussion. He says, are you the only person that's not heard about the things that have gone on in Jerusalem? And he says, what things? And then they relate to him the discussion about how the high priests had delivered Jesus up, had him crucified, how unjust that was, and how that they didn't know Now, this prophet that they were expecting to set up his kingdom, what to expect? And then he starts back. How does he first respond to them? And this starts in verse 25. What does he say? What does Jesus say? O fools and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? I made the point on Wednesday night in my discussion, in my talk, about the Jews and their culture and from the standpoint of context. The Jews knew the prophets. And he's saying and challenging them here at this point, don't you know the prophets at this point? Don't you know how these things tie together? Why are you being so foolish? And then he starts to continue to talk to them. Has he revealed himself to them at this point yet? No. So they're just assuming that this is someone that's well-learned and he understands the events that have occurred and he's tied it together in context with the prophecies that have occurred. And he's telling them about it. So he begins in verse 27, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures and things concerning himself. Now, not a long ways from Jerusalem to Emmaus, but it was long enough for him to at least go through and do a high-level discussion of all the prophets and how they pointed to the events that would occur. And no doubt, Jesus would have been keenly capable of doing that. I don't think I could do that. But we'd be sitting here for several hours if we were trying to do that and pull all of that out and tie it together. He succinctly conveys all of that information to them. As, you know, Moses prophesied about it. And he very well may have tied it all the way back to the discussions in Genesis. It doesn't state that he does here. But he ties together all of the prophecies. Doesn't enumerate them. He just says, he succinctly carries them forward. You know, David spoke of Moses, Jeremiah, Isaiah. You could think of him touching on each one of those as they relate to the discussions associated with the crucifixion and the coming of the Christ. In verse 28, they drew nigh into a village and he wanted to continue on and go further with them. He wanted to keep talking to them and keep teaching them. They said, no, it's late in the evening. It's going to get dark here. Let's turn into the place. And he agrees to go and turn into the house with them. Verse 29, they constrained him, abide with us, for it is toward evening. Verse 30, and it came to pass as he sat at meat with them, he took bread and blessed it and brake it. Now, what's significant about Jesus taking bread with them and eating it? He's human. Okay? And this is an important point to make with students, and even as it relates to further discussions we'll have. In other instances, Jesus uses his fact that he's eating bread to emphasize that he's not a spirit. He's not something. He's not a ghost. He's not an apparition. He's not a hallucination to them. He's a physical being, a human being, that is raised from the dead. Okay. And it says in verse 31, and their eyes were opened, and he vanished from them, or vanished out of their sight. The terms that are used here in several of these discussions, I find it very interesting and powerful as it relates to, it doesn't say he left the room. It says he vanished. Now, and it will say that later in the appearance to the apostles, he came into a room where the door was shut. This is evidence of Jesus' continuing power. He was not just a human being. He was deity. He had power. He continued to have power as a result of his resurrection. No change in that deity that occurred from one point to the other. And that's an important point to make to students as well. This was not a man that was a good man that lived and was killed, or that was buried and pulled out and then continued to appear to people. This is an individual who had power to perform miracles beforehand, but also to disappear out of a room. Okay. Those elements are things that touch on teaching and doctrine that people have had to dispel the validity of the resurrection, the teaching surrounding the resurrection. It's important to pick on just the little subtle points that are made that help build and strengthen our faith. Immediately, what did those two men do? They ran back to Jerusalem. This is, again, all of this is occurring on the first day. So they went to Emmaus on the first day after having left and heard about the events and hearing what the women had said about Jesus being raised. They ran back to Jerusalem. Who did they report to? The apostles. Okay? And they reported to the apostles. And while they were reporting to the apostles, what did they learn? They learned that Jesus had appeared to Peter. And that was being conveyed at the same time. What event occurs next? We can continue to look at this. In Luke 24, 33 and 35, it tells that Jesus appeared to Peter. Now I'm just going to bring that up here as we relate to the other discussion in John. In verse 36 of Luke, and as they thus spake, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said unto them, "Peace be unto you." And this is recorded both in Luke's account and in John's account. Appeared to them and said, "Okay." What was their reaction? It scared them to death. It says they were terrified. They were affrighted. What are some of the other translations? How do they convey that? King James says affrighted. They supposed that he had been a spirit. Why might they suppose that he was a spirit? Well, he just appeared. Okay? Any other translations use a different term there? They were certainly uneasy with what had just occurred. No doubt we would. If Jesus appeared and stood in front of us right now, I don't know that any of us would be able to say anything. We would be awestruck. We would be stunned. In certain venues, people would be running for the doors. You know, it would scare them to the point where they would not know what to do. We see here, he says, "Peace be unto you," and continues on in verse 38 and says unto them, "Why are you troubled? Why do thoughts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands, my feet, and see my side." Okay, again, key points here that Jesus is using to emphasize to the people that he's appearing to that he is not an apparition, he is not a spirit. He is saying, "I have hands. You can see the nail prints in the hands. You can see the nail prints in my feet, and you can see the spear pierced where the spear pierced my side." All of those things are not something that would be present on an apparition. They might just appear there, but if we go further into the next appearance and Thomas is there, what does Jesus actually tell him to do? Okay? As we imagine the idea of a spirit or whatever, if you stick your hand into it, do you actually feel anything? No. This is a physical body here. Okay. Handle me here. What did he want them to come away from this appearance with? No doubt. Absolute faith. No question that he was the one who had been hung on that cross and he had been raised. There's key elements that you could argue, well, that somebody else appeared and it just looked like Jesus. No. He had the imprints. This is the one that was crucified. Okay? Well, he fell asleep and he's been raised. No, he was dead. The evidence that was pronounced that caused his death, the piercing of his side, to the point that no other human would have been able to survive. Oh, absolutely. He's clearing up any misperception there might be. He's using his appearances to them, and that's a good point. I hadn't tied together that they had stated that it was a vision. Clearing up, no, this is not. This is a real appearance. Why not? I mean, the only other person they'd seen raised from the dead was Lazarus. In their lifetimes, they had heard accounts of other things. I mean, this is just it's beyond comprehension. In the context here, it is continuing a timeline. They arose up the same hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 gathered together. They were there with him, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and hath appeared to Simon." So they're recounting that he had appeared to Simon. I think it's in the context of this discussion where they're there in the room together that's actually occurring. So who's speaking? I think it's the 11 are recounting there to the ones on the road that had come from Emmaus that this had occurred. Okay. As we continue down, I made the point earlier when he was in Emmaus, he sat and ate with them. What does he do again here in verse 41? asked for food. And have you any meat? And they gave him a piece of broiled fish and honeycomb, and he ate it. Okay? Even in our, Hollywood's renditions of spirits and so on, when they eat something, well, what happens to it? Falls on the floor. This is a human body. It takes sustenance. It benefits from it. Jesus is a human. God, no doubt, born. He took it, he ate it in verse 43 and verse 44. These are the words which I spake unto you while I was yet with you. All things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me. Then opened he their understanding that they might understand the scriptures. Continuation of enlightening them so that they understood the context of the events that had occurred and how they tied together. Now, we know that they received the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. I don't think this is the instance of them receiving the Holy Spirit. I think he is teaching them, and they're understanding more than they've ever understood before. They lightened as how this ties together. They received the Holy Spirit. It's going to be a separate type of enlightenment. It's going to tie it together completely so that they can go and then convey things in a way that no human really could. More information and more context and more evidence of how everything ties together. Other comments? Well, we see that as it continues. He appears to them even on this first day. It's when something really big happens in our lives, can we comprehend it and absorb it really in the moment that it happens? Well, this is a space of hours or less that Jesus has been raised. They've spent all day trying to figure out what's going on, no doubt. If you think of it, there's nothing recorded, but obviously they've been talking amongst themselves and trying to understand what has happened, and people have now split up and headed, some left to go to Emmaus, and others no doubt left to go to other places. We'll see eventually that they start leaving Jerusalem and heading back to Galilee. It'll be a while before they grasp everything, but at this point that they significantly have a greater understanding than they had earlier. And no doubt, this appearance to the apostles at this point sets the stage for them to start understanding, we have to stay together. We have to continue to do as He asked us to do and not completely scatter. That's emphasized as well, as we'll see that they do stay together. Starting the next appearance, He appeared to the apostles in the room. The next appearance is 8 days later. We don't have any evidence of any other appearances occurring at that point. The scriptures don't record them. But what does John say in two different instances at the end of the book of John? He did a whole lot more than what's written. There may have been other appearances that were not recorded. These are the ones that are recorded for our purposes, for our edification, for our evidence, build our faith. There may have been other instances as well that occurred. He no doubt took the opportunity during this time to teach others and to continue to teach. So, 8 days later is indicated that he appears in John 20, 24 through 25. And they again were gathered in a room. Scriptures are interesting, tying together small points. It says something about the door. What does it say about the door? The door was shut. Okay? And verse 24, but Thomas, one of the 12, called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. This is at this occurrence. Starting verse 25, the other disciples said before him, we have seen the Lord. But he said unto them, except I shall see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger into the print of the nails, and thrust my hand into his side, I will not believe. Now Jesus had offered up that opportunity for people to handle him at the previous instance. But Thomas here is the one that says, it's going to take me physically handling him for me to believe. Not specific. I think in the context of what's discussing here is they're talking about Jesus had appeared to them. So, first off, John doesn't... we're in John. It's about Thomas, though. Thomas is saying, I don't believe what you're telling me in the first place. But most importantly, I won't believe that he's appeared till I've actually done these things by him, till I've seen it and felt it. And Jesus makes that emphasis later about, yeah, Rick?
Okay.
Right. So I think that's the key emphasis there, is he couldn't believe it at this point that Jesus had been raised. Because later in verse 29 he says, how much more those that had not seen and did believe, pairing that as a contrast to Thomas. So we do see in the next instance here in verse 26, and after 8 days again, his disciples were within, Thomas with them. Then came Jesus, the doors being shut, stood in the midst, and what did Jesus say again? Peace be unto you. Okay. Same introduction was much like, hello, glad to see you again. Peace be unto you. You know, and I think in this instance that's a very apt phrase, because if someone that had been dead appeared to me, I would need some peace. Be able to comprehend and calm down. Because I'm imposing my feelings on this, but no doubt they were humans too, and they would have reacted in similar manner that we might react. Jesus immediately responds. Now, what does this tell us about Jesus' power? He knew, though he wasn't physically there, what Thomas had said. Okay? This attests to the omniscience of deity and all-knowingness of deity. Verse 27, he said, then he said to Thomas, reach hither thy finger and behold my hands, reach hither thy hand and thrust it into my side, and be not faithless but believing. Now, he uses a much stronger term here. In the previous instance, he encouraged them to feel him and come and touch him. Here he's saying, shove your finger in my hand and shove your hand in my side, and don't be doubting anymore. Calling it out on those statements that he's made. And Thomas answered and said, my Lord and my God. He knew at that point, he had to stick his hands in his side. He knew from the fact that Jesus related exactly what he had said back. He knew by the appearance of him, recognizing his physical appearance as being the Lord. Verse 29, Jesus said, Thomas, because thou hast seen me and hast believed, blessed are they that now have not seen and yet have believed. And that's the point I would make related to your question earlier, Daniel. No. No. He had the unfortunate event of not being there with the rest of them on the first appearance. So it set him apart in a way that the Scriptures do go and address it. So I agree. I think you're correct, but I also want to point out, had Jesus used same information before to upbraid them about not understanding? Even in his teaching up to this point, before his crucifixion, he had presented enough information that they should believe, but what were they doing? They still didn't understand it. So he's continuing that same, probably stronger at this point, because there's a whole lot more evidence now that it's all tied together. But he's using the same tactics. You should know this from what you've learned and what you've been taught. And now I want you to know it. He's emphasizing that very strongly here. I'm going to pose a question back to everybody here on that. No. Is he talking at that time just in the past, or is he also talking future thinking? It's not specific enough to distinguish time related to that, but I think it's appropriate to bring that up, you know, to students as well. This does. Doug? It was no doubt instantaneous that he fully recognized it at that point and was fully believed that this was the Lord that he was speaking to. We know that on the road to Emmaus, Jesus disguised as, they didn't recognize him. And whether that's a combination of a physical difference or of a, I can't believe that this could be Jesus, therefore I'm not believing that this is child, it would be totally impossible. This is an angel that's just walking along with us. Right. Right. No, he doesn't cut him any slack. I think this is a good example as a teaching point as well with our students. They had been presented with enough information that they should know. But we have that same information. And as we teach it to our children, they should come to an understanding. We have enough information that much to the contrary of what it's all been lost. Thoughts and intents of our hearts are known. I think it does. We're going to get short on time here, but I want to touch on several other instances. So we appeared to the 11 apostles 8 days later. He continues to make appearances throughout the next 40 days. Now, all of those are for the purpose of building faith. More people, you know, if it had been just limited to the appearances to just the 12, it would have been much harder for those 12 individuals to have credibility. Can you appear to 500 brethren at once? Start to test, have 500 people testify to the same thing? Well, you know, one person might have, and Bob makes this point in his comparison, one person might have an hallucination and you might convince somebody else to believe your hallucination. But for each of these different occurrences to have the same events, same evidence coming forth out of an appearance, it's not a hallucination. It's not something they're dreaming up. It's evidence that testifies to its own validity as a function of it piling on top of each other one after the other. I mean, at this point, should have been sufficient. But when you start to add together, he's appeared now in a different area, not just in Jerusalem. He's appeared in Galilee. He's appeared to 500 brethren. We don't know when. He's appeared to them as well, and they've testified that they've seen him. He appears to James, and as to which James this is, it's not specific. Study that and make a determination which way you're going to present it. I would tend to argue that it's most likely it's either James the brother of John or James the Jesus' brother. I would argue between those two probably, because they're the most prominent that appear in the Gospels going forward, or in the text going forward. And then again to his apostles before the ascension and at the giving of the Great Commission in the different accounts. So there's going to have been plenty of evidence, Jesus appearing to his apostles and appearing to others at that point, just to prevent what? Or what should it prevent? Doubt. Okay? I think a lot of that is important to convey to our children, young students, and particularly high school students and even college age particularly, because they're going to get introduced into a lot of other ideas that are going to say, there's doubt. This tied together with all the prophecies, teaching and helping our children understand how they look forward, should lead to there being no doubt. Thoughts, comments? No, we don't. Somewhere in that time period. And each of the, other than these specific ones, we don't have an indication of when these were exactly during that period of time. So up to this point, we know a timeline. It's all on the first day. It's 8 days later. And then from there to his that time period, that first day.
But you know it.
Right. Thank you.